Hi, I'm Christos Gage.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gage.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan.
And this is Victor Dandridge, and you're listening to Thinking Outside of the Long Box. Got to better leave, but I still sleep. Way too excited, been waiting all week. And everyone's here, so let's pack up the van. It's not enough room, so we Tetris the bag. We're on the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to The Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and I'm coming to you from beautiful downtown Memphis. And to my immediate right in the Principality of Louisiana is Mike Manning. How you doing, Mike?
It's actually a state, not a principality, but I'm doing excellent today.
All right, and over to my immediate left in the beautiful, beautiful Commonwealth of Massachusetts is my good friends Tom Boucher and Josh Opper. How you guys?
Doing great.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Well, you're always welcome, my good friend Josh. Your knowledge is nothing but a boon to us. Love having you on. And today we're going to have a great podcast because we're going to talk about something that everyone has an opinion on, I think. The Heralds of Galactus and who were the better Heralds of Galactus. Each of one of us is going to take one of their favorite ones and we're going to deconstruct them a little bit. And to give you a little bit of backstory, everyone knows who Galactus is, one of the great big bad guys of the Marvel Universe. Who saw the Fantastic Four movie?
Which one?
I blocked it from my mind.
The one where there was a giant pink cloud called Galactus.
Oh, you mean the Parallax ripoff?
Yes. Let's just be clear. That wasn't Galactus, people. Don't get it confused. Don't be swerved. That was not Galactus. Galactus is actually one of the greater bad guys in the Marvel Universe, standing as tall as a planet at times and, of course, just giant at other times. Galactus is a monster that needs entire planets to fight him off when he attacks. And he has a herald. The herald usually portends to Galactus's coming and softens the planet up, or at least scouts the planet for Galactus. He's had many heralds over the past, and now we're going to talk about some of our favorite ones. Mike, why don't you start us off? Because I think you have one of the more famous ones.
I thought I did. Last week when we talked about it off the air, I said I'm going to choose Binary. But unfortunately, Binary was never a herald of the Galactus. No. I'm sorry. I'm a DC guy.
Let me ask you this. Why did you think Binary was? Because it rung untrue to me, but your knowledge is so vast, I thought you must be right. What made you think Binary was a herald of Galactus?
50-50 chance.
She looked like a herald of Galactus.
She did go into outer space.
Josh, I just want you to know that we call that the ratio right there of people who are going to get that joke very small. It's a very small ratio.
Hey, I'm playing to my crowd.
Play to your crowd, you computer scientist nerd. So who are you going to do instead there, Mikey?
I'll go last.
All right. How about my good friend Tommy B? Tommy B in Boston, what do you got for me?
I'm going to talk about the first Herald of Galactus, the Silver Surfer, otherwise known as Norrin Rad. I mean, the Silver Surfer became the Herald of Galactus because he wanted to save his world of Zen Law from being devoured. So he agreed to basically scout ahead for worlds that were uninhabited
basically,
but suitable for Galactus's hunger.
Point of order, he was not the first Herald of Galactus. He was just the first Herald that was shown in comic books.
Who was the first Herald of Galactus, Mikey?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Galactus. I thought Binary was one of Galactus' Heralds.
I love the Silver Surfer because, you know, he's one of those characters that is doomed never to be happy. You know, he served Galactus for a bit and then turned on Galactus when Galactus wanted to devour the Earth. And Galactus stranded him on Earth. The Silver Surfer has always been separated from the love of his life, Shalabal. He's just kind of a great tortured character that you know is never going to be totally happy in the Marvel Universe.
Which is totally counter to his theme because he's a surfer with the last name Rad. You'd think he'd be a layback happy guy.
Yeah,
exactly. And also, he's one of the few characters that you don't have a parallel to him in the DC Universe. I mean, is there anybody that surfs around?
Nope, that is untrue. The Black Skier. That's their parallel.
Really?
The Black Skier?
The Black Skier. Don't make me look him up. Actually, I believe the Black Skier actually is another Marvel character that was used to make fun of. But there was a Black Skier in DC that was used as kind of a joke Silver Surfer for a while, too. I'll look it up. Keep talking there, Tommy.
I like the Silver Surfer. He's got a bit of Galactus's power cosmic. He was affiliated with the Defenders. He's guest starred in a number of books, Avengers, FF, etc., and so forth. And just him being so tortured and yet so powerful and yet kind of so bizarre at the same time. I mean, surfing is just something that I wouldn't think would be really popular on other worlds, but apparently surfing between the stars is.
Yeah, and let me correct myself slightly. It was the Black Racer. It's a character developed by Kirby, our good friend Kirby, and he looks a lot like the Silver Surfer, except he's a rather large guy on two skis who shoots around the cosmic, a herald of death, summoning people to death, and he skis. You can look it up, Black Racer, DC, Kirby creation.
Jack Kirby was one of the creators of the Silver Surfer along with Stan Lee.
Right, so if you look under the New Gods, you'll see the Black Racer, and you will see a lot of similarities.
So the Scarlet Skier is the parody that you're talking about.
Yes, the Scarlet Skier, thank you.
He was in Justice League Antarctica, one of my favorite horrible supervillain teams.
That is a fantastic book.
So not only do we have the Black Racer, but we also have the Scarlet Skier. So there's two there, Tommy. Not trying to prove you wrong, but you guys proved me wrong enough.
That's right, and let's not forget about Thrasher. I mean, dude on a skateboard. All
right. Come on.
Awesome.
Dazzler, awesome. Chick on roller skates.
But Dazzler doesn't surf the skies.
Doesn't Dazzler surf the sky?
She was a herald of Galactus, I believe.
Wait,
put a disco ball over that girl.
All right.
I think she might have been some guy named Galactus's secretary. I don't think she was a herald of Galactus.
All right. Then let's get into my favorite character, Terax, because Dazzler plays right into it. Terax was a low-level – I shouldn't say low-level. He was a tyrant on a planet. Galactus picked Terax to be his new herald because he was – totally amoral. He would do whatever it took. Before Terax became his herald, he wanted the Fantastic Four to humble Terax and defeat Terax to give Terax a little humility so that when Terax was empowered by Galactus with all this power cosmic, he'd remember that he was defeated by these Earth heroes and he'd be a little more beholden to Galactus. This goes off a little bit too well, and Terax always holds a grudge against the Fantastic Four, even after Galactus gives him the power cosmic. Now, Terax, being a tyrant, a thug, and more morally ambiguous, of course, than the Silver Surfer, he wants to get away from Galactus's rule. He breaks away on a couple of occasions. One occasion, he hides in a black hole. Now, nothing gets out of a black hole, not even light, right? Oh, but isn't there a superhero out there that can bend and control light? So who does Galactus go to help him get Terax out of a black hole and give power cosmic to? None other than Dazzler. It is Dazzler. He has to go get Dazzler, abuse her with the power cosmic to rip a black hole apart to pull his erstwhile herald out. So while Dazzler was never really a herald of Galactus, she did have the power cosmic, which kind of technically makes her
a herald of Galactus.
Galactus, baby. Suck it! I can't believe how great that came around. I like Terax because in the Great Rock paper, scissors scheme of things, very often you will have these superheroes who, I have the power of light, I have the power of fire, I have the power of water, I like the power of earth. Whenever I'm picking a Pokemon, I go for the earth character. It's very simple for me. I don't know why. I guess maybe I just have some idiot earth sign in me. Or maybe it's because all the earth characters who represent earth are chunky. And I like that. It just might just be that. But I like the earth character signs. And Terax controlled the earth. He controlled, well, I shouldn't say he controlled earth because he didn't control earth. He controlled the ground. He controlled rocks and asteroids. And I always thought that that power was cool. Plus, he had a cool axe. And I like the axe. Josh, I'm going to toss it over to you. Who is your favorite Herald of Galactus?
I love and also feel bad for Fire Lord because he was fantastic, but he was always second fiddle. So, you know, he's a guy named Pyreus Krill, comes from the planet Xandar. Some people might recognize that from Guardians of the Galaxy. He graduates from the Nova Corps pretty close to the top of his class, but not first, and goes onto a Xandarian warship commanded by a guy named Gabriel Lan. Now, Galactus bumps into their ship and picks, of course, the best military mind on the ship. Not Fire Lord. His buddy and commander becomes Airwalker. And Fire Lord, or Pyreus, then becomes the commander of the ship, which he gets only because of his buddy's absence. So now he's second fiddle commander. He sort of snuck in there as the leader of the ship. And he goes, he's completely obsessed with finding his friend. So he sails all over the galaxy, hither and yon, only to find Galactus right when his buddy is killed. Airwalker is killed. So Galactus finds who? The second best guy, and picks Fire Lord for his next herald. Now, you gotta love a guy who's, first of all, his name's Pyreus, so his mundane name, immediately you know he's gonna be a fire guy. So he wields the fire staff, he's super cool. After that, he gets to, you know, roam around the galaxy. He helps Thor out in a couple of missions. He flies to Earth. He accidentally gets, you know, triggered into a battle with the Avengers. And who kicks his ass? Spider-Man. Yeah, you heard it. The Herald of Galactus then gets his butt kicked by Spider-Man. So I always feel that, well, Fire Lord, he looked cool. He had a great look, the fire staff. He was always second fiddle, and he's just right behind the guy in the lead. He's just always second place, and I think that's why I like him best.
You always did like an underdog, Josh. That's one of your endearing traits.
Hey, what can I say?
And he did have a cool look.
He did have a look.
And with a name like Pyreus, I mean, you're either going to be like a fire god or a venereal disease.
Right, you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Or not.
I used to teach fencing, and one of my students was named Solomon Monday. And I'm like, this kid, he's going to try to take over the world at some point, right? Solomon freaking Monday?
Yeah, he wants pants too.
Yeah, Solomon Monday wants pants. Once again, that's the Dennis ratio when it comes to comedy. Only one in about 100. Get that, Josh.
Hey, you know.
Mikey, did you pick your favorite herald yet?
Yes, I'm not going to go with the Fallen One, who was the first herald of Galactus, but I'm going to go with Nova, a.k.a. Frankie Ray. She first appeared in the Fantastic Four, number 164, in 1975. So to give you a little bit of background, kids, the Human Torch and Submariner were the first two superheroes that Marvel Comics had. The Human Torch was not the Human Torch from the Fantastic Four. He was an android that was created by a gentleman named Phineas Horton. Well, Phineas Horton had a daughter named... Go ahead, guess, guys.
Frankie.
Pyrus!
Frankie, yes. no, Frankie Ray was Phineas Horton's stepdaughter. She was exposed to the same chemicals that the original Human Torch was exposed to, so she had torch-like powers, and he gave her a mental block, making her afraid of fire. So, of course, later on in life, she started dating the Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, because, you know, that made total sense. Later on, she finds out that she was mentally blocked by her stepfather and starts to love fire, becoming Nova. Wow, she... Later on, takes over as a Herald of Galactus. She has a horrible time as the Herald of Galactus. She gets imprisoned by the Skrulls. Later on, after she gets rescued, she tries to date Fire Lord.
And we all know how that worked out, right?
Her second choice after dating the Human Torch, by the way.
I was going to ask. You must have been second choice at some point. Thank you.
Then later on, she gets her butt kicked because she's turned evil by Reed Richards and the Power Pack. Yes, that's right, the Power Pack, who we'll have to talk about more in depth later on.
The children beat her.
We really should do an all-children's superhero show at some point because there's a couple fun ones out there.
So, yeah, she was ultimately killed by an alien named Morg. So it did not turn out well for poor Nova.
But did she start dating Fire Lord and then be, like, almost immediately killed? Because that seems about right.
Yeah, that was almost immediately.
Good. Just wanted to make sure we can keep going with everything kind of sucks for our friend the Fire Lord.
I do remember that the Silver Surfer had to help her out several times.
Good ad, Mikey. Good ad, Tommy. All right, so now we're going to take a look at the front of the long box. Mikey, what do you got for us?
All right, I've got the new comic series called Jughead. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about the Archie comic series with the lovable Forsyth P. Jones III. If you haven't been reading Archie comics, they've just redone all of Archie with the Archie title and Jughead being the first two books that they took on with kind of a new look than the the ones that have looked the same since the 40s. The new comic is excellent. The great thing about it is it has an ongoing storyline where Jughead has convinced that they fired Mr. Weatherby and has put in a new principal in charge of Riverdale High who is trying to turn everyone in Riverdale High into a group of super spies. And so he's got that whole storyline going on, but every comic in of itself is its own adventure series. And Jughead is kind of like a Walter Mitty. He just blanks in and out of consciousness and has all these daydreams. And sometimes they tie into the ongoing storyline. Sometimes they're just fantasies. And it's hard to know if he's having all these delusions in his head because he's just hungry for hamburgers or if he's really crazy. But I'm really enjoying it. And one of the other things that I enjoy about the comic is that at the end, they actually have old Jughead comic strips from the 1940s when Jughead first came around in 1941. So they had a time to develop his character. First, he was just kind of like the little punk kid who was afraid of getting hurt on the football field, and then he morphed into the Jughead that everybody knows and loves. So if you get a chance, I recommend you check it out. The good thing about it is, like I said, you can jump in whenever you want and then jump back out again. It's not going to confuse you with the storyline.
I'd just like to say some of the older storylines you might see in the back of those books. My grandfather wrote Archie Comics and Jughead from 1949 to 1952. He got paid for storylines and drawing for them.
Yeah, I always forget that. What was his name there, Josh?
What was that?
What was his name?
What was my grandfather's name? Albert Opper.
Albert Opper. We'll take a look at that. One of the things I like about the new Jughead series, of course, we talked about how he came off as aromantic asexual, and he says the reason that he's the only one that can see the big conspiracy is because his brain isn't flooded and confused with hormones like poor Archie, and they do a couple of funny bits with that.
Also, you mentioned Walter Mitty. Great soundtrack to the new Walter Mitty.
Oh, I haven't done that yet.
It's fantastic.
Well, Josh, just so you know, the comics that they print in the back, they don't have credits for who wrote and drew the stories.
So in the 40s, they did not in the front and back of the comic. Oh, you mean just in general?
No, I'm talking about in the latest Jughead comic. I just looked at the reprinted stories. They don't credit who did the story.
Gotcha. So do they have the overtitle on the first page?
No, they don't.
No, okay. So that's where you would see his name if you were looking at one of the old books.
Yeah, so, I think it's because they're pulling it out of an old book that they're not. It doesn't have the front page because the Jughead stories were probably in the back of different comic books like Pep or Archie.
Yeah, his name wasn't on the front page back then. When they actually gave individual storylines credit just on the he actually just signed the first panel of his story. That was it.
Oh, that's great for the front of the long box. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box for us?
I've got Alpha Flight, the complete series by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lente. Fred Van Lente, we did an interview with a few weeks back. This series came out in 2012. I think it's one of the better Alpha Flight books that I've read. In it, the politics of Canada, the new prime minister is with the Unity Party, and the Unity really is a cover story for the Master. He is trying to convert everyone into a new alien species that he wants to take to the stars and basically take over the galaxy. And he does that by first converting the Prime Minister of Canada and then starting to try to kidnap and convert Alpha Flight, which doesn't go all that well. He then converts Alpha Strike, which is basically the members of Omega Flight. And there's a lot of battling between Alpha Flight and Omega Flight and such. And I don't know, it was a pretty good book.
Well, I'm not perfect when it comes to all things Latin, but shouldn't Omega Strike be way better than Alpha?
You would think so. But
yeah,
you would think so.
I'm just saying.
They weren't Canada's premier supergroup.
Oh, they were like the B team. All right,
they
actually,
like
going
the
Alpha Omega, I guess they're the B team, so they should have had a pretty easy time of it.
But they did kidnap most of Alpha Flight using plans that the Guardian had created in case any of the members of Alpha Flight went rogue, and the plans did mostly work. So leader of Alpha Flight knows how to take down his team.
Well, we all love it when a plan comes together.
That's right. And if I had a body condom, I'd go rogue too.
Yeah. We'd all go rogue, but you need the full body condom. Once again, Dennis Leary ratio, Josh. Try to keep it down to earth with us, will you? For God's sakes.
I'm skirting the edges of reality. Also, I just want to say the Van Lente interview is in the Long Box Episode 9, the Valentine's Day special, if you want to check it out.
Oh, that was a nice one.
See, at least Josh listens to our podcast, LT.
LT famously says he never listened to our podcast because he listens to too many. Take a couple out of your iPod, for God's sake. Listen to what we're saying.
I'm listening as fast as I can.
Actually, the funny thing is LT has actually listened to every single episode, but he actually does a shot every time he says and basically, so he doesn't remember a single one.
That could explain why he never complains about all the stuff he says and I cut out.
It's true.
All right. Well, that brings me to my section, which is the social relevant in comic books. And for this one, we're going to have a little bit of fun. We're going to go for Punisher, number 60, the Punisher plus Cage. And this is the fun little run of issues where the Punisher becomes an African-American male living in the South. He has to go deep undercover. He takes a drug and some chemicals that turn him into an African-American. And he basically does blackface for about 10 issues, I think. Is that about right, Mike?
Was this the one where he was trying to get into college and wanted the scholarship?
No,
that was Soul Man. I'm confused.
That was Soul Man, and that was a terrific one, too. The thing with Frank Castle being African-American, there were a lot of attempts to make it socially relevant. He's pulled over by a whole bunch of cops. He doesn't realize how much danger he's in until they pull him out of the car and say, "What's the matter, boy? Coon got your tongue." And then they start beating him mercilessly, Rodney King style. And I say that because they drew the pictures in the comic book to be very reminiscent of the Rodney King beating. The cop cars and the freeway are set up very much like it. So I'm not saying that lightly. I did a little research, looked at some pictures, and it seems like there was an attempt to make it look a little bit like that. But fortunately for him, everyone's favorite real African-American superhero, Cage, not Luke Cage at the time, but just Cage, comes to save him, not knowing at the time that it's Frank Castle in, let's be nice and say, disguise.
Sure.
Here's the weird part, though. All his facial features changed, too.
Yeah.
Because
to look like C. Thomas Howell?
And this is
want to go on record saying it's never okay to do blackface unless you're cosplaying Luke Cage.
No, it's still
not. It's, what?
No.
It's not okay to do blackface when you're cosplaying. Well, why would you say that? That's terrible.
I just also want to note that you're talking about a series from 1992. You're not talking about a series from the 1960s, are you?
No, this is... Well, I referenced the Rodney King beating, so no, it's not the 1960s.
Oh, so bad.
We all know how you feel about Cage, Tom.
I loathe the Cage run, but, you know, I also understand that they wanted to make it a little bit more update, a little bit more hip. I just think they missed the mark completely and changed the character way, way, way too much.
It sounds like they kind of missed the mark even on the crossovers.
Well, you know, in this crossover, Luke Cage is seen as an African-American hero who is immediately into the fight, attacking some police officers to help out someone that he thinks is being beaten for no reason. And he is, you know, seen as the protector of the of African-Americans in an inner-city setting. So perhaps Cage isn't all that bad in this one. The run itself is pretty bad, but they are making a attempt at showing police brutality as bad. The only people using racial slurs are people who are easily identified as bad guys, which is something I like when I see a comic book. If you're going to use a racially insensitive term, as long as it's the bad guys doing it to show that they're bad guys and not gratuitous, I'm okay with that, to try to teach that it's wrong. And just to be clear, I cosplay as Luke Cage, and I've never used blackface and never will. There's only one character I think is okay to use blackface for. Two characters. Can you name them?
To use blackface or to just...
To use blackface. There's two characters I think you have to use blackface for.
If you're a drow elf.
That's right. If you're a drow elf, because if you're not black and in some way to be a drow elf, then you're just an elf.
The Jawa?
No, I think this one's kind of iffy, but Mystique. But Mystique can be any color she damn well pleases. So if you're not going dark, dark blue, people might not know you're Mystique. Or you can just dress as anything you want and say, hi, I'm Mystique.
Tom, you can't just dress yourself up as a black guy and call yourself Mystique. still not cool with the blackface. I'm going to disagree.
I'm saying you got to, if you're going to do the classic Mystique with the white dress, and I would pull off the white dress. The white dress with the skulls and all that crazy stuff on it, you got to go, not blackface, but you got to go dark, dark, dark blue, because I think that's kind of the color she was. And if you're going to do Nightcrawler, I think you got to go dark blue too. Purple Man, you got to go purple. Martian Manhunter, you got to go green.
Wait, David Tennant didn't go purple.
It's true. No,
it's
purple about him.
True. But all right, I'll tell
otherwise,
you what,
you're a dude in a suit. It's going to be hard for somebody to recognize who you are. But
yeah, go ahead, walk around Comic-Con in a suit and see who goes Purple Man.
Well, it will be a purple suit.
Yeah. I'm just going to assume it's Mystique.
Hey, if you're wearing a white suit, I'm going to assume you're Arcade. By the way, I want to do an Arcade cosplay so bad. And for Arcade, I would change my hair. I never changed my hair for Luke Cage, but I think for Arcade, you got to go redhead.
And just in case Mikey cuts that out, there was a huge silence when Tom said Arcade, because I don't think any of us knew what he was talking about.
You guys all know, remember Arcade, right?
I remember going to an arcade.
Murder World.
Yeah, of course I remember Arcade. I read a book.
Yeah, read a book.
The guy that used to make the huge pinball machines?
Murder Worlds, yes.
Yes, Murder World, you idiot. Arcade was awesome. Josh, you remember Arcade, right?
I do remember that now, yeah.
Let me just say this. Before there was any of those stupid movies where do you want to play a game and the guy, you know, put people in these horrible mazes. What were those things called? Saw. Before there were the Saw movies, there was a psychopathic maniac who would put you in horrible situations for you to fight your way out of, and his name was Arcade.
Okay.
Don't be silent. That's all true.
I remember giant pinball machines.
He did a giant pinball machine a couple times. He did some very insidious traps to test the limits of superheroes' powers. And if they couldn't get out, he figured they weren't worthy to get out anyways. I loved Murder World. Murder World was captured my imagination as a kid. All right, guys. This is the part of the show where we talk a little bit about our plugs and also about what's coming up and our interviews. Kirby Crackle, our unofficial house band, played us in with Going Home, a terrific song. If you're on your way to a con, listen to it. And also, they're going to be playing us out tonight with Ring Capacity, a great song to run to clean the house to do anything where you got to get yourself pumped up. I love Ring Capacity. Mikey, who's our interview with tonight?
Hey, my name is JB Garner, and you're in the Long Box.
All right, we're here at Pensacon 2016, and we are interviewing an author. Could you tell us what you've written?
Well, I've written two book series, soon to be three. I've written The Push Chronicles, which is superhero tales with a twist. I write 3 Seconds to Legend, which is the martial arts drama taken through the lens of modern professional wrestling. And soon I'll be putting out the Inspector Redmayne Mysteries, which is mystery, fantasy, romance, sort of a film noir twist.
These are all novels. There's no pictures in them other than on the cover, right?
On the cover, yeah. We're talking full-length novels. Yes, full-length novels.
And how long are these novels?
Well, anywhere from the shortest, I think, is about 69,000 words, which is just that full-size novel, up to 80, 90,000, 100,000.
Now, is the Push Chronicles a series of books?
Yes, there's currently 3 books in the series. It's a story arc in of itself. I'm planning on writing more, but all three kind of encompass one solid story. Indomitable is the first book. Indefatigable is the second book, and Incorruptible is the third book. Superhero alliteration at its finest.
All right, and where can people find your books?
Well, you can find my books. The easiest way is through my website, jbgarner58.wordpress.com. Of course, you can also find them just straight by searching for them on Amazon.com, Smashwords, iBooks, Barnes & Noble. You can find them electronically pretty much anywhere. And you can also get them print to order from any of those outlets.
And do you have a blog also?
Yes, my website is my blog. I do book reviews, general writing articles, and whatever pops into my head.
Now, are you a comic book guy? Do you like comic books?
I like comic books a lot. I'm a little bit distant from the modern storyline, just because after too many reboots, and convergences and divergences and rebirths and secret wars and crises, you start to get a little muddled. But I still love the genre.
Now, who's your favorite superhero?
My favorite superhero right now is Captain Marvel, the modern Marvel, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Did you read her when she was Ms. Marvel back in the day when Chris Claremont was writing her?
Yes, I did. I actually had even when I was a kid, I had the first issue, and then I lost most of the rest, and eventually lost the first issue because I was a kid. But, yeah, I've been a fan ever since the beginning, through all the ups and the downs, Avengers number 200, and everything in between.
I think you're referring to the rape of Captain Marvel?
Yes, that's Avengers 200, I forget which annual it is, but yes. And, of course, Claremont striking back in X-Men later. But
yes, addressing the whole rape of Captain Marvel. It was great meeting you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Of course. Thank you very much.
We haven't decided exactly what con to go to next, but Dragon Con is coming up, and I think we're all hoping to get to that one. Tommy, you got anything to plug?
I would like to once again plug ianlino.com, purveyors of fine, fine T-shirts and glassware and stickers. I just received my Serenity T-shirt in the mail today, the other day, and it is great. I love it.
Wait a minute. Also, you're getting kickbacks?
I'm not getting kickbacks. I bought it at Pensacon. He ran out.
Fine.
I paid my hard cash for that T-shirt. Also, I'd like to say that if you like our podcast, or even if you don't like our podcast, you are more than welcome to leave us a positive review on iTunes. We are the Long Box, currently by unknown, but hopefully by us soon.
I want to stay being unknown. It gives us that crazy wrestler vibe. And for those of you on Twitter, let me just say that you can go to Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box Guys. Post something on our wall. Any questions you have, we will be sure to answer them. It might take us a while, and it might be wrong, but I swear to you, we will answer them. Josh, you got anything to plug?
Sure, I'll be completely selfish and plug my own company. Go to udcvm.com for utility data center, all of your cloud hosting needs.
Ooh, I need cloud hosting. No,
sure.
I don't.
Everybody needs cloud hosting. Where else where does one put their clouds?
All right, well, that's going to do it for us, everybody. I want to thank all of my good friends. A little shout-out. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Josh. And remember, everybody, don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love. Have a great day.
Space. It seems I've yet to find my place. I'm guarding 2814. I don't know why it's chosen me, but from the corner of my eye, I catch a glimpse of evil light.